I'm Steve Potter, and coming up on Cityscape, actor Joe Hanrahan on his role in a one-man play, a true story of the world's greatest Shakespeare forger and his hilarious and sad life. But first, have you ever driven through an old part of town, past a derelict building, barely noticing the fading images or lettering on an old brick wall? Images that once advertised things like candy, beer, shoes, whatever it might have been. Well, our next guest not only notices, but is drawn to them. And in a new book, Fading Ads of St. Louis, he's captured them in photographs and text. William Stage, welcome to Cityscape.
Oh, thank you.
You call these ghost signs?
Yeah, I do, but not all of them are ghost signs. In my mind, ghost signs are the really are the really faded ones, barely legible. The rest of them are wall signs.
I see. So if they're in good shape, they're wall signs. If they're faded in time, they're ghost signs. You actually did a book on called Ghost Signs, I guess, back in 1989.
You're right. I did.
And then a couple of years ago, we talked to you. You did some postcards with your daughter, Margaret. It was sort of along the same lines, right?
Oh, yeah. Only that one was what I thought were the best examples of these wall signs.
The Painted Ad, I think, is what that was called. So is this project, this new book, Fading Ads of St. Louis, is this just an extension of those two projects?
Yeah, incredibly. It's a third book on the topic. I never thought I would be doing a third book, but the publisher, the History Press in South Carolina, contacted me out of the blue and asked me if I would be willing to do – they're a regional publisher. That, I mean, actually very a very topical local publisher. They're not local here, but, I mean, they specialize in books that are local.
Mm-hmm.
And they contacted me, and I agreed, and everything was laid out, and I had about a year to produce it. And I will say that I did make an effort to go scouting around – and find a bunch of new ones that I had not found before. And I availed myself to the internet, and I found other people who were really involved in the same sort of discipline. I found a guy in California who goes around full-time around the country. His name is Dr. Ken Jones. He goes around the country photographing wall signs with all kinds of ultra-modern, state-of-the-art equipment.
Do you think it's true with the kind of point I made in the beginning that many of us drive by these old things and we don't really notice them?
I agree. And once you do begin to notice them, it's contagious. You begin to see more and more. The more you find, the more you find.
Now, these ads, what do you call them? Wall signs?
Yeah.
Wall signs. They're sort of the, I guess they predated billboards, but sort of the same thing, right?
Yeah, they were. They were outdoor advertising, highly visible. And, you know, and definitely designed to gain the most attention from, you know, either motorists or pedestrians.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them were on corners, okay, where there were no buildings to obscure them.
And where people might slow down, I guess.
Or be walking along the sidewalk and see them from a block away. And then, as often happened, other buildings were built next to them. And then they became actually covered up, I mean, with another building butting up against, or they could be in a gangway. I found quite a few that were in gangways.
Hmm.
And there's one in Dogtown that has been redone by wall dog Lonnie Teddington back in 2006. And that was for a saloon and for a particular, I think it was ABC bottled beer, Alpenbrau beer. And that thing has been in a gangway for probably 100 years. It's been protected because it was in a gangway. But they built that. It was freestanding, and we know that from accounts. People getting off the streetcar, going to the World's Fair, were able to walk up the hill and go right by it. Then another building came along, Seamus McDaniel Saloon, a tavern, and it obscured that other, the original sign.
How specific can you be as far as, you know, when these wall signs started to appear and when they stopped? How specific can you be?
It would just be general. I tell people from the 1880s to the 1950s. That was the heyday.
Uh-huh. You brought up, you alluded to this a few minutes ago, that you divide the wall signs into two categories, those that have were covered up for years and still are fairly pristine, and others that have been exposed for years and that are faded. Do you prefer one over the other?
No, I don't. They're both interesting to me. And the ones that are that got covered up after they were already painted because a building got erected next to it. When that happens, when they get exposed, it's really like kind of like, I don't know, I don't have a good word for it except remarkable. Mm-hmm. It's really amazing how all of a sudden there's this great, interesting wall sign. And I got to tell you, a lot of times they get uncovered and exposed, and they're there, and then a week later they're gone because the building next to it got torn down, but the building that the sign, the host of that particular sign got torn down as well.
We're talking to William Sage about his book, Fading Ads of St. Louis, and you make a point in your book, you know, these days everybody's, you know, lead paint is a big no-no these days.
Yeah.
But lead paint was a good thing as far as these signs go and as far as our being able to enjoy them today.
Yeah, good thing. The lead paint has pigment and it actually soaked into the brick and it became part of the building. The sign became part of the building, you know, like a skin kind of. Yeah, I mean, there's one in Soulard, Dr. Hoffman's Red Drops, and I know that thing is at least 120 years old. At least.
Where is that exactly? Do you know?
It's on 9th and Allen. It's right by the shanty bar. If you're in the shanty, you can look out the window and see it very well.
I've been there.
It faces north, and actually north-facing signs last the longest because they get less direct sunlight, and they seem to get more protected from the elements.
That makes sense.
But this particular one, Dr. Hoffman's Red Drops, it advertises it was a patent medicine. And I actually have a little bottle. I have a picture of a little bottle of it. It was a patent medicine from the 1870s and 1880s, and it promises to cure menstrual cramps and catarrh, which is, I think, I don't know what it is, maybe like a flu. And also, it claims to cure cholera.
Was there truth in advertising that? Mm-hmm.
Cholera, you know, that was an epidemic. The last known big epidemic we had here was about 1866, or maybe in the 1870s. So, you know, why would they put cholera on there if it was, you know, 40 years later?
Right.
It was probably put on there because people were still thinking about cholera from the 1870s.
Now, these wall signs, some can be fairly simplistic and others more sophisticated, right?
Oh, yeah. Usually they had a slogan like Fletcher's Castoria, the kind you have always bought. Mm-hmm. The name Charles Fletcher is on every bottle. And then gold medal flower, eventually, why not now? You know? But then other ones, the ad copy ran on and on and on. In my first book, I have one from Chicago. It's Thomas Murray Clothing. And it just goes on. It's like more than a paragraph. He says something like, you know, it's all painted on the side of a big building in Chicago. If you think you don't pay a lot for these clothes, you know, go down the street to my competition, you know. It's like, he's kind of like a rant, you know.
See, that surprises me because I pictured like the slogan, the examples you were giving, the slogans, something you just see really quickly and move on. But now I'm picturing people stopping by the side of a building and spending a couple of minutes, you know, reading a big paragraph.
Yeah, and a lot of them too. My favorite ones are the ones that are politically incorrect, you know, like where they Rainier beer for health. You know, and this one on the cover of the painted ad shows a guy smoking a cigar. He's got a big smile on his face, and he's puffing on a cigar. I mean, this is a good wall sign from Denver. Every puff a pleasure. Why smokers prefer M&O cigars. Every puff a pleasure. And that may well be true. Hmm. But you know, we can't talk like that nowadays, you know.
Right. I'm curious what we know about the artists that did these. Were these highly trained people? Were they paid a lot? Or was this kind of a low-level job? Do you have any idea?
Well, many of them work for big companies like Thomas Cusack and American Billboard. And I'm sure that they made a living. You know, they were either worked the big cities and went home at night, or they got into a paint truck with another guy and they went roaming around the countryside. But there definitely were two different kinds. There was the journeyman who could easily lay out copy. And believe me, when you're on a six-story building and you need to make everything come out correctly, you know, and not have your letters be bunched up, you got to know what you're doing. But then there was another type of sign painter who was more like an artist. And he could paint a boy holding a loaf of bread or a guy happily smoking a cigar and make it look like a fine art work. And then he could do lettering too.
Right.
He could do these are called pictorials, where they have like Elsie the Contented Cow, you know. They had to know how to draw that.
I want to point out that your book is much more than photographs. It's full of wonderful photographs that you've taken of these wall signs, but there's also a lot of text there where you go into – you do a lot of background and history, and that's very fascinating too.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. You know, as I began to work on it, I began to realize that this really is like a history of local advertising.
You make a point. You say in the book that few cities in America have as many of these signs as St. Louis. Is that really true, and why?
Well, I've been to Cincinnati and Indianapolis and Chicago, and they all have quite a few too. Any big city that has a lot of – that's built of brick is going to have a lot of them. I don't know about Albuquerque or L.A., but yeah, it is true. We have loads of these things. I know a lot of them are gone. I began to photograph here in the late 70s and early 80s, and many of the signs I photographed, which are actually in this book, are now gone.
Yeah. Has there been any movement to save these things?
No, you really can't. I mean, you do it photographically.
Couldn't they, like, put some kind of coating on them
to save
them?
Yeah, they could, sure. And then that gets argued back and forth. I mean, the preservationists, and I think I would include myself, we like to see them just gently fade away. It takes a long time.
Wait a minute. You love these things, you document them,
yeah,
and you want them to fade away.
I don't want them to fade away. I just am okay with them fading away. I'm okay with that. I mean, we take a picture of it, and it's there for us. You know, there was this one which I think was probably the most gorgeous wall sign in St. Louis called Admiral, the New Cigarette. It was in North Grand Circle. And it was also exposed before I came here. It had to be, because there was a big – it was really in good shape, and there was a big vacant lot in front of it. But you can tell by looking at it. It's from the turn of the century, and I mean two centuries ago. Turns ago.
Yeah.
Anyway, not made by a trust was the slogan. You know, and you think about that, and you think, well, you know, Teddy Roosevelt was the trust buster. Had to be related to that back when trusts were making cigarettes and people didn't like it for whatever reason. So anyway, I'm glad I have a photograph of that. And even if I didn't photograph it, it would be in my head. I would remember it. That's good enough for me.
You say you first started photographing these back in the late 70s, right?
Actually mid-70s.
Mid-70s. And then you published that first book in, what was it, 89?
Right.
So since you began doing it, have you seen the interest in these signs grow at all?
Oh, yeah, I really have. By the way, that book we talked about, Ghost Signs, it was the first commercially produced book on the topic. So I kind of lucked out there. And I have to believe that that book really kind of galvanized the movement. But nowadays there are several websites, including me. I have one. I became friends with a guy in England named Sam Roberts from London. And he has the most wonderful website about it. And he is so ambitious. He's documented. Well, he's got people out there helping him, but he's worked to document every interesting wall sign in the United Kingdom, going back about maybe 8 years. And anyway, yeah, there are many books on the topic now, and there are many websites on the topic, and there are civic groups who are involved and trying to do an inventories of them.
Well, I think it's a beautiful book, and the text also fascinating. Fading Ads of St. Louis by William Stage. And if you go to stlpublicradio.org, to the Cityscape page, we'll have information on that and some links to your websites. And you have a book signing coming up in March?
Correct. Schlafly Library, that's in the West End.
March 26th.
7 p.m.
One final question. We still have buildings. We still have walls. Why did they become obsolete?
Well, most people will tell you, and I will tell you too, that it's been the billboards. And you know, the billboards basically took them over because the highway system was being built, the interstates, and they skirted they went on the outskirts of town, and people were no longer, you know, having to drive through the cities. They went around the cities, and then the billboards popped up. as a very clean and efficient and quick form of advertising. The wall signs kept on going. They never stopped, but really that was the end of them as being having a monopoly on the outdoor advertising.
Well, I think they're beautiful to look at, and I personally like the ones that are fading for some reason. And as you say, they'll be gone someday, but you've captured them in this great book, Fading Ads of St. Louis by William Stage. I really enjoy it. And thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Coming up next on Cityscape, Joe Hanrahan and Solemn Mockeries. This is St. Louis Public Radio.